I do know who you are. I do know what I want. We have a very particular set of skills. Skills we've acquired over a certain amount of time. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. So I will find you, and I will interview you for the Gaffer Tapes.
State your name and record.
Steve Baker, former manager of Egham Town, Alton and Ayrshire Football Club, Chipstead Football Club, and current gaffer of Harrow Borough.
How long?
Nearly 5 years.
Is it really?
5 years in February. So yeah, not too far off, mate.
Yeah.
Seemed like a lot longer.
It did.
But I don't know the exact date off my head, but probably like most people, I rely on my Facebook memories to pop up. So I'll let you know when that comes.
Well, I was going to sort of say you sort of took over a fantastic squad from a magnificent manager, but I'd better not. I think it's fair to say that, like I said to Steve McKim, that we do know each other. I think it's fair to say
just a bit.
I know you're better than Macker anyway, but we've sort of crossed paths for a long time, you know, and in and out of football, I think it's fair to say. So I think I always like people to know that, because it's not as if we're cheating anybody, you know.
No, but when they accuse you of being biased, they know you are, because I work for you as well. No, I think, as you mentioned it before we started it, I think if you look back originally, obviously I got to know you through working at North Hulk Sports. Back in the day in the sports shop, that was the place to be for non-league football. We had some players come in and out of there. And a brief spell with you at Southall.
That's right, on loan from Hayes.
Obviously paths have crossed at Chertsey. I was player coach there
for a long time.
Didn't have a bad spell there last year.
Well, it sort of makes up for what you're going to throw at me for a year.
So we'll just leave that there.
We'll go one each.
No more insults.
Yeah.
And in between that, obviously, the Harrow connection is a big connection there as well.
Hendon.
Obviously played briefly when you was the first team coach there. And the other one we couldn't think of was I first worked for you in football in terms of St Albans.
Yeah, that's right, for that fortnight.
They're all about a fortnight long. It's a common theme there, safe to say we go back a long way, I'd say.
Yeah, and I mean, I said to Steve McKim that some people you see go into football management and you're not shocked in the slightest, and others you see go in and you're mesmerised, and you're one of the latter. You know, like when I watched you growing up and sort of playing, I never seen you as a manager. You know, I think your personality's changed over the years. I think it's fair to say that, you know, because we had good fun in the early days, but I never ever seen you as going maybe an assistant, because I took you to St Albans with me. You know that I always thought you'd be good in and around it, but was that something? When did that become apparent to you, Steve? Or
it probably most people that play with me would say exactly the same thing. It was fair to say that I liked to laugh, I liked to night out. Probably didn't look after myself.
Did you say probably there?
Yeah, I didn't look after myself.
Yeah,
yes. I was one of those. I come out of I spent 6 years at Tottenham, got released, went to Brentford, was an apprentice for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then dropped into non-league football, and probably typical young lad thinking this would be easy, and it wasn't. And then all of a sudden you're not training every day. Having said that, my first couple of years at Hayes were good. I had some good times there. Then I think when Brownie come in, probably start to change my...
Who did you sign for this? I thought it was Terry, was it not?
No, it was Clive Griffiths was the original manager.
Yes, I remember Clive.
And I had first season under Clive when I just left, and I'm sure I used to drive him mad because I was one that thought I should be playing every week. But that's what you do when you're 18 in the night, then you've been released from a pro club.
What goes round comes round, by the way, doesn't it?
Yeah, I paid the price for that one, I can tell you.
Yeah.
So I had my first season there, and then the start of the second season, I picked up a bad knee injury pre-season. And I didn't have a fallout with Clive, but the club didn't treat me particularly well at the time as a non-contracted player. So I wasn't particularly happy. So I then went out, and oddly enough, I think that's the period not long after was when I played for you briefly at Southall.
So I thought,
come back from the knee injury.
That's right, yeah.
And I then went to Yedin briefly under Gordon Bartlett. couldn't get inside, wasn't enjoying it, still wasn't 100% fit, back from the injury. And then out of the blue, I got a call with a few lads saying, listen, we spoke to Brownie, he's just taken over at Hayes, he'd like you to come back down. Lo and behold, he signed me, I think, on the Thursday, and on the Saturday, I scored the winner against Yedin. Come on, son, got the winner in the last
one. One of them large
football. It still reminds me of that to this day. You said you were rubbish when you was here.
Yeah.
I had a fantastic time at Hayes under Terry.
And would he be the big influence in... And I know we pick different things off differently.
There's lots of different people that I've worked for, played for, that I've picked up. I'd say a bit of every good manager is within me.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot of poor things as well, but they're good as well because you think, well, I wouldn't do that.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think they both help you out. But I think, all in all, I think if I modelled myself on one particular individual of how I try to manage a group, probably Brownie would be the closest to it.
Yeah.
He had a great fine line of you wanted to play for him, you loved him, he was funny, he was a good crack.
Yeah.
But you knew there was a line and come.
That's the art, isn't it? That's a real
hard
art.
Line because come quarter past two, if you were not doing something you should have been doing, you knew about it. But he'd be the first in the bar, regardless of results or how you did, to become Brownie again.
That's I absolutely agree. I think in management, that fine line is something that I feel I've been lucky that I've found it. You know. And I think you know when you found it. Has that line changed? Because, you know, if you think of the characters, going back to when that time to the characters in your own dressing room now, has that line changed or is that a myth?
No, I think the line's the same. I think we're all guilty a little bit of, and I'm sure that players did it 20 years ago when we first come up, we're all guilty saying, oh, it's not like it used to be, it's this, is that. And the group of players now will say exactly the same thing in 15 years' time when they're not playing.
Yeah.
The cultures are probably a little bit different. I think players don't tend to live as local to clubs.
Yep.
So you don't maybe get people staying around as long. Mm. Players look
after... Or as loyal.
Yeah, or as loyal. You'll get a few that will go up the road for another 30, 40 quid, or in some cases another 300 or 400 quid,
which
I totally get. The players look after themselves a lot better than any of us did. I don't care who you were, but any of us did. They don't drink so much. So that side of it's changed, but ultimately... On a match day, you're trying to get the best out of a part-time individual.
Mm.
So I think, in answer to the question, I think the challenge is the same. It's probably the main difference now is the type of person or the problem that you might deal with.
Yeah.
Whereas in our day, it was, oh God, did he go out last night? Did he do this? Did he do that? And these days, it's like, oh, you parked in the wrong car park spot. Or you know what I mean? It's just a very, very different type of things. Or some of the lads are a little bit deeper now and trying to find out what the problems are and things like that a little bit different.
I always think about the Hayes dressing room that you played in and captained at a very young age as well.
Yeah.
I remember you being captain, which was like...
And funnily enough, you talk about problems with players. Our centre midfielder at the time went to prison. So Brownie asked me to take the band. He was away for a while, put it that way. And Brownie gave me the band and he started playing me in midfield just before that. I was getting niggly injuries all the time and wasn't doing so well up front. I'd lost a little bit of pace, probably through fitness of coming out of full-time football. And then I played a couple of games in midfield and started scoring a few goals. And Brownie said, I'd like you in there. And then... This so happened that it was Tony Kelly, by the way.
Yeah, no, I know who it was.
Yeah. Went and stayed with Her Majesty for a little while. And Brownie gave me the band and I had it for a few months. I think Warren Kelly was that injured as well at the time. Yeah. So I had it and I thrived on it. Hayes was my boyhood club. I lived in Hayes.
Lived around the corner. Hayes. Yeah, yeah.
And it was, to this day, it's my club and it always will be.
Yeah.
And that sort of links me back to what we were talking about. How did you get into that management side of it, really? Yeah. And then...
But when did you think you were going to, you know, because it is about being a gaffer, and I know you don't like the word, and none of us do.
No, I hate it.
So do I, but that's why I called it the gaffer tip, because it's sort of a cringeworthy thing.
Do you know
but,
what, why I just touch on that, I used to find the lads for calling me it, but then a few new lads come in and start to call me it, and I can't stop nicking money from whenever they just got in.
Well, I started long, well, you know, you played on me, when it, I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
In professional football, yes, it was boss, wasn't it? Boss or gaffer, that's where it came out of. But as you go through periods towards the end, everybody called you Gaffer, I think. But for me, the big thing is that we, and we're not going to name names here, but we know people who have insisted on it, don't we?
That's why I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Because when I played for Brownie, Terry Brown at A's, it was Brownie. Yeah. Everybody called him Brownie.
Yeah.
And most of the lads called me Bakes, whether they played me or they know me, that's what everyone would call me.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of managers, like you say, insisting that's what I've got to be called. I've spoken to players that said the managers actually pulled them up and said, don't call me that, I'm Gaffer. And I'm like, I'm going yourself. You know what I mean? I can't. But a lot of the players are actually uncomfortable with calling you by your name.
They are, because but that's what I'm talking about, the change of character.
Yeah.
You know, that there is a change. There is a move where players, I'm not going to say hate authority, but would rebel against authority and insisted on calling you by your name or your nickname. Whereas I think players today, you know, it's part of the game. It's part of their dream is that you're the Gaffer. And I think as you get older, there's a natural distance anyway in there that
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, when it probably first come about, I had a really bad injury when I played for Hayes. I snapped my cruciate. I did it 3 times and didn't kick a ball for about 2.5 years. Then when I tried to get back playing, I never got back to the level I was at. And eventually I dropped down a couple of leagues and enjoyed the last few years playing. But there was something in me that it haunted me for years, that I could never get over the fact that I never achieved what I wanted to as a player. Because oddly enough, when I got my bad injury, it was the first time in non-league football my attitude was bang on. I didn't drink for 3 months. I trained every day. I've never been so fit. And I did my cruise ship pre-seasons against Swindon. And I never played at that level again.
Yeah.
And even talking about it now, I feel like I'm not in my stomach. It really gets under my skin.
Does that give you... We all have to be driven, and I'm not sure where mine came from, but I always had it. Do you think that's a big part of where
you're... That was the biggest drive. The biggest drive for me... And I've always said this privately, my biggest ambition in management is to achieve more than I did as a player, which some would say that's not that difficult. But
you haven't retired, right?
Yeah, no. But in fairness, I played in a very successful team. We won the Old Isthmian Premier, which is probably the equivalent of the Conference South these days.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
And then we went into it.
How do you judge that, though? Because to be fair, you've 450 games under your belt now as a manager, you know? That's got to be tenfold of what you had as a player.
I say that
in jest, because I know you well enough, but you know, you have to be class yourself now as an experienced manager. You've been doing it for a dozen years or something.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing it for a long time. I did my first job at Egham very, very well. Just before that, I was player coach at Chertsey for 2 or 3 years, which was a great experience. Worked with some good people there, obviously Mark Turner, Roy Butler, and one or two others over there. And then I got the opportunity to manage Egham, which was my first job. I remember turning up on my own. I had no one with me to begin with. And me and then the team we got together, we did a great little job there. When I look back, I do laugh, because some of the things you're like, oh God, I'd never do that again, or can you think of any
well, let me, while you're thinking, Chairman will come up time and time again, because it's about Chairman. And you know, whereas Chertsey, the guy I worked under, I don't know where it was, the same one as you, but was fine. And I've been really lucky with my Chairman, but I know you've had a couple of...
Yeah,
I don't know why you want to go into it. That's what you're on here for.
I'm happy to go into detail.
You know, but when you went to Egham, how was the chairman there then, first, as your first job?
Well, Egham is one of them jobs that, this is commonly known, and I've no issue with Pat, the chairman, Pat Bennett, the chairman over there, and his boys, the Bennett lads over there that work with me. But the club has a reputation, and rightly so, that whenever you get the job, everyone says, oh, what are you doing? You won't be there 5 minutes. I had nearly 2 years there. I'd say for 95% of it was really, really good. Pat as a chairman, just couldn't read him. Never knew what was coming. He was pretty good to me most of the time. No major issues until I left, really.
Yeah.
I took over the team of fourth from bottom. By the end of the year, we finished 12th. The following year, we finished fourth on a quite a low budget with a lot of youth players.
How did you do that? How did you you've walked in on your own as your first... Now, you worked under Roy Butler, who I know well, because his son captained Hendon and AFC Wimbledon for me, Steve Butler. So I've known Roy a long time, and great, you're right, great to sort of mentor and to work under, a calm guy, and and those are stuff. But you're walking the egg and effectively green as far as management. And
completely green.
So obviously there's something there straight away, you know, knowledge of players, was it? What was it?
Before the Egan manager got sacked, I was working with him as player manager. I didn't have a very close relationship with him. I think he offered it to me, but I've since found out that was a little bit forced through the chairman, but right. It is what it is.
Yeah.
The manager didn't last long, and then they offered me the job. And so, because I was already sort of playing there, I'd helped to get a few of the players there already that I played with previously at Chertsey before Spencer Day took over. So I had a few connections there, and there was another guy who was at Chertsey running the youth side who had had a fallout with Spencer. He left, so I said, if you want to come and give me a hand, you can, and on your way, can you bring a few of the youth lads, because Spencer got rid of the whole youth team.
So
a lot of young, hungry local lads who wanted to play football.
Probably good as your first job. So you make mistakes without making mistakes.
And they didn't know I was making them.
Exactly.
I didn't have no senior ex-pros in there, no older players, which could have caused me a problem for your first job.
Yes, exactly.
So I had a group of young lads, the older players I knew because I was playing with. Yeah. And I played with them for 3 or 4 years. So it was probably, it just worked quite well for the first job, really.
And on that, and the word comes up time and time again in management, there is an element of luck in management, isn't there?
I'd rather be a lucky manager than a good one.
Timing and stuff like that.
At any level, timing, injuries, right player, right time, things happen in games, things happen at clubs. Yeah. You know, it's week after week, something goes wrong or something goes right.
You can never guess.
The timing was good for me because I'd been coming to the end of my playing career for a couple of years, just sort of play coach, but less and less playing because the problems over with my knee. The Egham job for most of the time was great. We got a bit stale in my sort of second full season there, and I'd lost quite a few good players. A few had moved on to better clubs, higher levels.
Yeah.
And then probably not having enough new contacts to bring people in was quite hard, which it is when you're first doing it.
Yeah.
And then we've been on a little bit of a bad run. I think it was only like 8th in the league, and I'd asked to see Pat on a Thursday night about budget, and I turned up on a Thursday to meet him, and he said, well, I'm glad you've come to this meeting I've called, he said, because I'm going to sack you. And I'm like, well, I've asked to see you, can I go first? And that was it.
Really?
And it was just that he sat there and told me he thought I was a wonderful manager, I'd done a great job for the club, he liked me as a person, he felt I'd go on to be a fantastic manager, but at the moment he didn't think I was right for Egham. I since found out I know why I was sacked. There was a couple of people that were involved with me that stabbed me in the back hugely. I don't need to even go into detail or even name them because they're not even worth talking about. The last one I saw in Sainsbury's hid round the corner of the frozen aisle when he saw me. So that probably speaks for itself. But when you bring people in the club and you give them good roles and they seem to enjoy it, and then when they don't get what they want, that's the payback you get.
Yeah.
But that's the biggest lesson I've ever learned about having people around, a lot of trust.
Trust is massive.
It's more important than how good they are maybe at the jobs.
Yeah. I think you have to be, it's another fine line, because I think if you get it right, Steve, you want people who are capable of management.
Yeah.
Because I always say to my staff, I want you to think you're the manager, but I'll have the final say, because I think that if you're thinking anything other than you're the manager, what's the point? But getting people who are on that level.
But you've got to have people that challenge you. You've got to have people that disagree with you. Mm. And you want people that will, if you're getting something wrong, that will tell you.
Yeah, when the door's shut. And then when you go in the bar, you go in as a...
Not when you're going to watch a game and then watching a game with the chairman.
Yeah.
Which is pretty much what happened at Egham. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean...
But fine.
Pat can be a bit of a strange fellow. I've seen him since a couple of times. No major malice.
I think the one thing you'd say about the football club is it's been in the same place for the last 20 years.
Yeah, nothing much has changed.
Tells you all you need to know. So anyway, we'll move on.
Yeah.
Because I want to try and get through as much as I can, because you've been around a while. So you go Chipston, is it, after that?
No, after Egham, I didn't pick anything up for a little while. I did some little bit of coaching at Malmsey just to keep myself involved, because if you're not involved, nothing comes along.
Absolutely, man.
So when you got a girlfriend, there's always two or three around the corner. When you ain't got one, you find that mate, doesn't it? And that is going back some years. In case my wife's listened to this radio show.
I was only saying last week.
Yeah. And then I found myself, I was first team coach with Gary Meakin over at Wingate and Finchley.
Oh, yeah, Meeks, yeah.
I didn't know Meeks. He was looking for someone. He knew people that I knew really well, worked together. It was a really good 3 or 4 months. Yeah.
Good coach, Gary Meakin.
Really, really good coach. Yeah. Learned a lot off Gary working with him. Tough job and all he was doing at the time. Yeah. He was up against...
It's another chairman,
He was up against a lot of things there.
Yeah, I remember speaking to him at the time and I'd be wrong.
And I did feel for him because he was putting everything into the job, probably more than most people had previously done. And it was an uphill battle, but he kept the club up, which was a hell of an achievement from where they were. And we were relieved of our duties quite quickly. I was already leaving anyway, so yeah. It was going to be one of them things. And then I managed to blag an interview for the Walkman and Ersham job, which was quite strange actually, because I saw it advertised. I thought, I really, really got the bug for this now. I want to manage. Now I'd worked in the Ryman Prem for a few months, so I wasn't sure about the level. I don't know.
Yeah.
Even though Walkman was a league below, you don't doubt yourself, but there's that niggle of.
Absolutely.
If I step up a league from Egham and I've managed for 18 months, who do I know in the Ryman South? I don't know anyone.
Yeah.
So there was that slight concern, but if you worry about that when you get in the job.
Yeah.
So I rang up Walton Ersham, said the job's advertised, and they said, oh no, we're not seeing anybody else for it. So okay, fair enough. So I put the phone down. I then rung the club direct and managed to speak to the chairman direct, and he's... Before they put me through, they said, who's calling? And I said, oh, it's Steve Baker from Wingate and Finchley, knowing that he'd have to take that call because he wouldn't know what it was about.
Yeah, yeah.
When I spoke to him, I explained that I was at Wingate and Finchley.
Making the phone call?
Yeah, but I'd left 2 months ago. I'd just driven past the stadium. I had a quick conversation over the phone, told him what I'd done, what I was looking to do, where I was from, blah, blah, blah. And got an interview a couple of weeks later. And a month after that phone call, I got offered the job, which... At the time, I was so pleased to get it because it's a big club, it's got a big history. Went in there and it was looked a bit.
Who'd you take in with her? Was that you and your only game?
Roy Butler came with me because Roy had come in towards the last year at Egham.
Yeah,
His work had changed, so he came over and worked with me again at Egham, where our roles were reversed because he was a manager at Chertsey and I was number two. And then the first call I put in when I got the job was Jesse Smith, who's obviously now my assistant manager here at Harrow Borough. Jesse,
quiet lad. Jesse,
Very quiet lad. Got a lot of confidence. Doesn't say a lot. Yeah, had a crap left foot when he played.
Yeah, good player. He played for me as well.
Yeah, you know the one. Yeah,
dude. No, he's a tease. Knows his stuff to be player against magnificent.
And I'd played with Jess when I was 16 at Brookhouse. He'd worked with my dad for years at British Airways, and kept in touch with him. But he's a typical football mate. Yeah. I didn't speak to him for 3 years, and then I spoke to him. It would be like I'd spoke to him a week before.
Yeah.
So and I loved him as a lad when I played with him for a couple of years. And,
yeah.
He'd been working over at Walton and Ersham, I think under Neil Shipley at the time.
Walton Casuals?
Walton Casuals. Getting me Walton's mixed up there.
Yeah.
And they were in the Ryman South the previous season. So I remember talking to John Turner, your old number two.
Yes.
And he said, oh, Jesse's looking for something. Are you looking for someone? And it just made perfect sense.
Yeah.
So I had a quick half hour on the phone and that was done and dusted because his knowledge of players in the league within 10 minutes.
I can vouch for that.
Was 10 times more than me, Roy knew.
Yeah, well, that's where John Turner was made.
Exactly. So
and they're massive.
You can't do it then.
No, they're massive.
You could be the best coach in the world, but without contacts, players and knowledge, you've got no chance.
I came to the conclusion that it is about players, isn't it? It's just, you can be a good coach, but you're going to add 10% if you're lucky. Then the other 90%,
especially non-league football, we get hour and a half on a Thursday night if you're lucky.
Yeah.
If you've got good players, then your coaching will probably. If you're a good coach, your coaching will be even better because they'll make your sessions look better and they'll grasp your ideas. If your sessions are good and the players aren't very good,
what do you do? Because when I started, I did the sessions, I enjoyed that. But as I got older and older, I got further away from the training pitch. I would come in and do the put on a play stuff and set pieces, but I'd let other people do the session. Where were you and where are you now with that stuff?
When I first started to do it, probably try to do too much myself.
I was speaking to a manager today, a young manager, and I said that to him. It's a natural instinct, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because, and it's a bit of a control thing, because it's sort of your baby and you want to do it. Yeah. But I think, like, when I work with Roy, we shared a big amount between us.
Mm.
And certainly when Jesse and Roy got together, I was very conscious, because the one thing I found at Wingate with Gary, and I've told him this to his face, I'm not saying anything on his back, is that Gary did everything.
Yeah.
And I almost at times felt like I didn't do anything.
Just putting the sugar in the tea.
My concern was then that the players were like, what does he do? What does he say? Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure now if you ask some of the Wingate players about me, they go, yeah, he was all right, Bakes. Didn't say a lot, didn't do a lot.
Yeah.
The complete opposite to actually what I'm about.
And that's another part of management, is including your staff to a point that...
I think the experience at Wingate held me in real good stead, because probably when I was first at Egham, I was trying to do everything, and I was doing 50 things all right rather than 10 things really well.
Yeah.
And I think once I got in with Jess and Roy, I trusted them and knew they were good, and it was like, I don't want any of you standing around. I said, if you ever feel like you're not doing enough, you need to tell me. And if you feel like I'm doing too much, it goes the same way. So
every day's a school day, isn't it?
And I think as you get more experience and you learn more and you have different ideas of maybe what you want to work on. I think if you come to watch us training every week, one week you'll see me stand and do nothing. The next week you'll see me take the whole session.
Yeah.
Another week you'll see the three of us do half hour each.
Yeah.
Keeps the players on their toes a little bit.
Yeah.
And it depends how you're doing. So like, if we've had a stinker of a run and Tuesday we've lost and Thursday night, I might come in and say, right, you two, you don't need to do anything tonight. I'm on one tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or it might be, I'm fuming, I'm just going to watch tonight, pull people out one by one, you get on with it. Yeah. So,
and that's a feel, isn't it? That's a feel that comes with experience, is it fair to say?
Oh, 100%, because when you first do it, you're like, oh God, if I don't do it tonight, we won't win Saturday. It's rubbish.
Yeah.
You've got to do when you feel right, but you can only have that with experience.
Yeah.
And you know when it's time to do it.
You do. And I always think if there's someone that's going to be standing watching a session, it's brilliant when it's the manager, because the players know. But listen, just to move on a little bit, you know, now, and I did the same thing with Steve McKim. Steve Baker, the player, walks into Steve Baker, the manager's dressing room. How do they get on?
Depends what one. I
want the warts and all with it. I'm talking to Steve Baker, who I carried around Eileen after a Christmas night out, that one.
So you weren't going to bring it up.
I'm talking back in the day.
Now, if I could...
Walked in to your dressing room.
If I was looking at myself now...
Not as you. Just as a player. You know the character, you know what he's about. He walks into your dressing room, you've signed him. How would you get on, and what would you think of him?
So if I signed me as a player and I'm the manager...
Would you sign him? This could be a short conversation. Ooh. Would you sign him?
If I could sign the player that he was before he got injured, I'd sign him all day long.
Are you talking about the technical part of the game now?
I'm talking about
the whole thing.
Every bit of what was there.
Yes.
Was the bit that, including yourself, bit that you would never have seen of me. So I knew ability-wise I was good, I knew I could score goals, I'd got that attitude right finally and really wanted to strive to get on.
Yeah.
If it was the other Steve that had bad injuries, made bad choices, not through anything nasty, just wanted to have a laugh, wanted to have a great time, wanted to be everybody's mate.
Didn't identify when it was. Listen,
I know
Angel.
Do it, yeah,
you've been there. You know me.
I'd probably get him in and out with a kit. Because the lads would have loved it. But it's funny. You know, I actually had this conversation with my daughter the other day, and my lifestyle now, as I'm sure you know, is if I was giving myself some advice now, I would. If I was 20 years of age, I would say, do what you're doing now at 45. And I genuinely believe, some people might laugh at this, I genuinely believe I could have been a pro.
Yeah.
Not just from, not necessarily from ability, but from looking after myself.
Well, you're fitter now, Steve. You look fitter now than when you finished.
I'm fitter and lighter now than probably the last few years that I played.
Yeah.
I haven't had a drink for 18 months. I haven't eaten meat for 2 years. I've been vegan for 4 months. I cycle 5 days a week. I swim 4 days a week. Everything I should have done. Yeah. In fairness, though, not beat myself too much about it, which I do all the time.
Yeah, I don't think you can.
Things have changed a lot then. Yeah, yeah. Gyms weren't about.
Yeah.
As soon as you finished training, you'd had 2 pints sitting on the table for you, whether you wanted one or not.
Yeah.
And that was just that. And listen, I wouldn't change none of that for the world.
No, it's not about that.
Yeah.
It's not about that.
But I would, in answer to it, I would sit me down and give me the best advice I can ever have.
And what would Steve Baker, the player, think of Steve Baker, the manager?
I think he would say he's honest, because I would tell him or me, whoever is sitting there, exactly what I think. And that's the one thing I do like to pride myself on as a manager.
Yeah.
That I'm honest and I'll tell people how it is.
Yeah.
I won't lie to them, I'll always be honest with them, whether they like that or not. That's not really the issue. But I would try and manage people the way I wanted to be managed. And probably if I go back to, like I mentioned Brownie again, he's probably in that sort of fold. So I think I would play for me, because that would be a manager that wants to play, wants to get it down, wants us to do well. And
yeah. Can wrap his door and go and see him.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah.
And what about, like, honesty is a big word and we all use it. Yeah, let's talk about the, you know, and we're going to run over a little bit, but I don't mind. Let's talk about within the dressing room. Talk me through a couple of your worst times, or one of your worst times. And what I mean by that, I don't mean it can be a half time. It can be, because the one that springs to mind is when you lost a lot of the games towards the end of the season, and you learned a big lesson with complacency and stuff. But there might be other ones there. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, funny enough, before we started the show today, I didn't know the sort of questions you were going to ask, but I thought this would put, if this came up about your hardest time, there's only one winner for that, and that was my second full season at the club.
Mm.
Up till then, things have been going
at Harrow,
at Harrow.
I will say before you go into this, because I want to balance the ships, and I mean this wholehearted, and I've said to you that when I left here, that I was crawled out the back door on my hands and knees. This was a club that was getting relegated, and you came in and kept them up, and I to this day have no idea how you managed it. So I'm not saying. So I don't want to make it a negative. To balance the books, I want to make that point, because I think what you did to keep them up that first year, no matter how hard this next story is going to be, was a bigger task than what happened.
Oh yeah, I mean when I and that's as time got not the same time as a bit of a healer, and probably it is with that when you look at it in the context and how the club is and budgets and all bits and pieces like that, it probably, when you look back at it, it probably wasn't as bad as it felt with. And like you mentioned when we first come in.
Yeah. But continue your story, so I interrupt you, but I thought it was important.
Yeah, so, and I thought, if you asked me today what's the hardest part that I've had in management, it would undoubtedly, and I even struggled to say the words when we fell into a relegation zone on the last day of the season.
Yeah.
There's one thing as a manager no one wants on their CV. And that's a relegation, and I suppose we got reprieve on 53 points. We didn't go down. Is it 1-0 or is it?
Yeah. What'd you learn?
At the time, it was.
What'd you learn?
I learned to go with my gut instinct on players.
That you hadn't done then?
Is that what you're saying? I hadn't done, because there was a few players I was going to probably change at the end of the season, but. And I wasn't complacent, because we was in great shape. We had made the first round of the FA Cup.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
We were 13th with 6 games to go. Nowhere near getting
13th, wow.
But the league was so, so tight. We'd been looking at it all year, but we'd had a couple of good results, and you think. And I think the mistake was we all probably thought we're okay. And then in those last 6 games, if it could have gone wrong, it went wrong. I had players going on holiday that didn't tell me, that threw it in the last minute. I had players calling in sick, players couldn't train, players got injured, players were unavailable because of personal reasons, and it went on and on and on. But you still kept thinking, one win, we're absolutely fine. But the problem was then there was a couple of players who I won't name because
I don't think it's about that. It's about the about you. It's not about them.
Who told me they were away a day after the deadline to sign players. So I was in a position of going to the last few games with
people
don't know that.
And we have an obligation to keep it within the dressing room.
Yeah.
But supporters will be listening out going, what?
Yeah.
Not just Harrow Borough supporters, I mean, like...
Yeah, and some of them you were like... And there was definitely a few players that had the flip-flops on and towels ready for the end of the season, and you could see it. And then we lost a couple of games and you could... sort of sense we're struggling here, and whatever we did, it didn't work. Mm. And then we went into the final game of the season. I think there was one spot left, and I think five or six teams could go down on the day. So probably a normal Harrow Borough season.
I was going to say,
yeah,
you know, three of them.
Yeah. And we had Lowestoft away. I'd lost two players to illness on the Friday night, and I just had this feeling in my gut.
It's a long way to go and all.
This something just don't feel right. And we went there and we lost 2-0. And Burgess Hill, we were playing Merston. Burgess Hill had to win to stay up. If they drew, they were down and we were safe.
Yeah.
Now, something happened in their game and they were 7 minutes running over the top of us. Oh. So we sat in the middle of the pitch watching Twitter for their results. Merston equalised and made it 1-1, so we thought, we're safe. In the 97th minute, Burgess Hill scored, and I honestly, it's one of the worst feelings I've ever had in my life. It almost felt like someone had ripped my stomach out. And then to make matters even worse, Hendon, who could go down on the day, their game kicked off an hour late because the Lions were stuck in traffic. So we knew if Hendon lost, they were down and we were safe. So we then spent 45 minutes in Lowestoft clubhouse, technically relegated, waiting for their result. However, the team that they were playing, I can't remember, it was off the top of my head, but if it stayed a draw, they were both safe. And it was 1-1 with half an hour to go. It was never going to be anything else. And there's no issue with me with that.
No, yeah.
I would have done exactly the same. Yeah. And then an hour after final whistle went, we were technically relegated. And the chairman was brilliant. I'll give him his due. He couldn't have been any better to me. I think he knew he could just look at my face.
Yeah.
And I don't mean this. I'm not looking for sympathy of anybody.
Yeah.
That made me ill.
Yeah.
That really. You hear a lot of stuff about mental health with sports people, manager. That really affected my mental health. I didn't speak to anyone for ages. I went to watch a couple of games in 2 or 3 weeks. It sounds stupid. I went out with a cap on, a scarf, and glasses, so no one could recognise, no one could see me because I felt embarrassed. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't speak to any players, and it was the worst few weeks I've ever, apart from what I think we call real serious.
Yes, I think it's an important, it's a real important thing you've hit on, because I touched on it with Steve McKim, and I'll touch on it in other interviews I do in this series. People don't get it, do they? They as much as people think they understand what you go through as a football manager, unless you've actually said, and I mean assistants as well, until you've sat in that chair and gone through that, the buck properly stops with you.
Totally. I've been an assistant manager, and there is no pressure as an assistant manager.
My best job in football.
It's a great job. You can put your own pressure on yourself, and you can be the most passionate person in the world about it, but the pressure is completely different.
Yeah.
But
how did you get out of it?
I spoke to, including yourself, spoke to a lot of experienced people, because I didn't speak to anyone for the first few weeks, but it's like, anyway, you don't talk about it, you can't deal with it.
Yeah.
So I spoke to people like yourself and other managers, and the more people I spoke to, the more people said, you know what, you've done the FA Cup first round, you've got 53 points, which in any other league that year was mid-table. Yeah. And trust me, I looked at every league in the world.
Yeah,
And it was just unheard of. No one had ever gone down. I think the lowest ever was 49 or 50 points. And then the more, it will never take that feeling away. I feel it now when I'm talking about it.
Yeah.
But it's the biggest learning curve I've ever had in football, because you don't learn a lot when you win.
You learn, yes.
You learn when it don't go right. And I released, I released, I think, 14 players. A couple stayed. And most of them didn't let me down for most of the time, but the last few weeks, they didn't let me down, they let themselves down.
Yeah.
And then I've definitely managed differently since then. The second I'm not sure about a player now, he's gone.
Yeah.
Because, and the second we're doing all right, I'm thinking, should we sign a couple more?
Yeah.
Not, yeah. I think we're going to do okay. Yeah. So it just changes your focus of...
Make you better, do you think?
Oh, 100%.
Even your kill off on it.
I wish I'd never gone through it.
Yeah, yeah.
But because... Then... Someone always likes to remind me now and then about it, and it still gets me.
But that's part of the game.
But that's part of the game. But I suppose it is what it is. It has made me a better manager, and the club. I will say the chairman was top draw.
Yeah, well, he is. I've worked for him.
Club stayed by me. I think they looked at the overall picture of what we'd done when we first come here.
Yeah.
They then looked at the overall picture of the money we brought in the FA Cup, and I think the fact 53 points. Oh, and what? To add to the story, to make it even worse, we found out afterwards, Merstham then got 3 points deducted, so they dropped next to us, but they stayed up on goal difference. You couldn't make it up, but I wish I had made it up.
Yeah.
So but it's a tough one.
And I can vouch for the chairman here, because...
Make sure we go back to the chairman bits as well, because I'm going to talk to you about the Walton.
Yeah, we'll do.
When we go back on that.
Yeah, well, this could be...
I'm not letting him get away with
that. Yeah. Yeah, well, let's go back to that, because I need to wrap it up, and I want to wrap it up back here, you know, because you've been here nearly 6 years. And I remember this stuff at Walton, you know, and the chairman. Well, tell us, because I think it's an important... And this is, and every manager I speak to, and I suppose, this is the relationship that's massive for the football club.
It's the most important relationship. I mean... Us and the players is important. Well, it's massively important. But your relationship with your chairman, I didn't realise how it was important until I had a bad one. But oddly enough, the bad experience has served me well as well.
Yeah.
Because when I first got into management, I almost wanted to avoid a conversation with the chairman unless I needed one.
Yeah.
And you're like, if you win, I'll have a chat. If we lose, well, I hope he's not about. We all do that. We've all done that. But Walton was something else. When I first got the job, the chairman, Alan, at the time, was out of the country for quite a bit. So I was dealing with his son and another guy called Paul Martin Jones, who was like a director at the club. Lovely fella. And his son, Toby, he was good as gold. And we had a great start, brand new squad, playing good football, doing well, sitting high in the league. And everything was great.
Yeah.
And then Alan come back, so I stopped to have a bit more interaction with him. And it was a bit of a strange guy anyway. Just in some of his ideas on football and things like that. And things like in a certain game, a player held the ball in the corner with 1 minute to go and we were 1-0 up, and afterwards he said to me, I don't really want that, my club, it's not within the spirit of the game. I said, well, it's in the spirit of my game, it's 1-0 with a minute to go, get the ball in the corner.
Yeah.
So we disagreed on that one quite quickly.
Yeah, I was going to say,
But
don't see too many football managers going, what?
Yeah, but listen, it was his club, he's entitled to think what he wants to think. Then we went on a run. I've never known anything like it at a club. We had 8 players sent off in 11 games and a different player every game. We got knocked out of the trophy in the FA Cup because of it. But hardly any of them were deserved. It was just a freaky one of them things that happened. And as the weeks were going on, we had a couple of bad results, and he started to really interfere. The phone calls were going from once a week to twice to three to every day.
Give me a couple of examples of it.
But just telling me what I needed to do. Not advice or help.
Did you tell them what he needed to do?
Yeah, stop ringing me.
Yeah.
But it would just be, he'd have ideas about certain players or what we should be doing in training that were just bizarre. Like we had a winger that he said he's not as quick as he needs to be.
Okay, let me interrupt you here. Because see, I'm starting to get agitated even listening to you. But you know, and you're older now and wiser, and I'm older and finished. But my line to him is, it's none of your business.
No, my line now would be, first big job. Okay, yeah. I'll...
I understand that, but do you agree with me? Now you'd be going, by the way, none of your business.
I'll be like, Alan, you got the wrong number, mate.
Yeah. Go back.
You think, well, listen, if your chairman wants to put his opinion in, that's fine. I'll take that on board, Alan, and then I'll frighten the bin later on when you're not listening. And we start to pick up a little bit again, but the interference didn't stop. And we had a couple of conversations that I could sort of feel going one way, but I could feel myself getting the stage of, I'm not having this much longer. We were in a healthy position in the league. The club had cut the budget by a third, and we were doing well. We were six in the league. Should have been bottom with the budget we had.
Yeah.
And then we went to Redhill away. We had a dreadful first 20 minutes. They'd missed 4 one-on-ones. All of a sudden, I'm on the side, and I hear this man shouting and screaming at me. I see him getting over the wall. I thought it was one of their supporters batting me right-hander. Put me the first. And I turn around to the chairman. He got in the dugout, and he started shouting at me.
He got in
the dugout in front of the players.
During a game?
Yeah. And said, this is a disgrace. Get him off. Get one of your staff in the stand. I told you about that before. This isn't good enough. What are you... And he absolutely went ballistic. So I very calmly just said, Alan, go back over the other side. We'll have a chat after the game. Fortunately, we won 3-0. So I approached him after the game and I said, listen, Alan, I appreciate you're the chairman. You can't do that during the game. Okay, I said, I think an apology needs to be coming. And he said, I agree. He said, I think you need to apologise to me. This is the way you spoke to me in front of your players. You told me to go away. I said, are you for real? And I could see he clearly was.
Yeah.
And I resigned that night. And I said to Jesse and Roy straight afterwards, because they were like, oh, Bakes, we've worked so hard to get where we're at. Let's stick with it.
Yeah.
And I don't mean them stick with it as in they wanted
to stay. Because they
said, whatever you decide, Bakes, we're 100% with you. Yeah. I said, I cannot work for someone like that. So I spoke to him briefly that night. We agreed that neither of us would say too much about it, which I never have. It was very, very bizarre, and it was a shame because they were a nice club, nice supporters, nice people, and we could have done quite well that year.
Yeah.
But again, it's out of tough times. But I was so.
I'm always keen to sort of when I go through. I mean, I had only one bad experience with Chairman, was St Albans, as you know. And I always go back and look at how the club went after that, or how, you know, and when I look at Egan, what we've spoken about, if it's stuck in the mud for the best part of 20 years, and I can say it, you can't. I think a lot of that's down to the hierarchy at the football club, and Walton and Ursham felt like a stone at that particular time, you know.
Well, Walton did after. I mean, I'd lost count of how many managers they've had since. Yeah. They've had two relegations since.
And then
not every manager could be wrong.
No, and the bottom line is that you get the complete reverse here. When you get relegated, you've got a chairman who sees the big picture. And I know he does here. But just to finish back here, you know, you're saying you're more or less, you're nearly 6 years here.
Be 5 years in.
Or sorry, five years, beg your pardon. How do you reflect on them? And as much as this is obviously the longest you've spent at a club now, and you're at your most experienced, and the club is in the highest league that you've managed in, I think I'm right in saying.
Yeah.
Where do you feel it all is now at the moment, you know?
You've had
good years. That one relegation I get, but out of the 5 years, it's been a successful time.
A lot more positives than negatives. It was important from a personal point of view, and I remember having this conversation with yourself that the next job I went to, because in between Walton, obviously I went to Chipstead, we had a really good successful sort of about 14 months there, and then obviously the Harrow job come up. But it was important though that my next job wasn't a year. It needed to be a longer period, because otherwise your CV looks a bit iffy. But if I look at, like, obviously we discussed the disappointing end to that particular season. But since then, not long after that, the following year when the club had stuck by me, we had a real tough few months, and I was two games away from the sack, and I was told that.
Yeah.
And then we made a couple of changes, and it just went right. And that particular year, I think we finished 13th in the Isthmian, or might have been 11th actually, but it was the highest the club had finished for a long, long time. We had a brilliant last 3 or 4 months of the season.
You can't, as much as you don't want to hear you're two games away from the sack, there's an honesty there, isn't there?
Yeah, and in fairness, I probably agree with the club at the time. Something needed to happen.
Yeah.
Listen,
when I was here, I'd have sacked me 6-8 weeks before I left, you know. But
well, I wouldn't have sacked me, but it just wasn't happening, and whatever we tried didn't work. And I remember sitting here with Jesse and Wilkes, and Jesse come up and said, why don't we try this, we won the next two games, And we never looked back next season. We went on a brilliant run. Like I say, I think the last 4 months, I think we finished third in the form table. We were great, yeah. Some great football. And then obviously we moved over to the Southern League. And
has that been good for you?
We had a really good season last year. Yeah. Just missed out in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Which, for Haraborough, that's good. Yeah. Regardless of league change, I know people say, "Oh, the league's it's not an easy league." It's a
no, there's none of them are. None of them are. But have you found it? Next has been different because I did a little bit with Slough, and
it's. I think the novelty on the travelling's worn off a little bit this year with a couple coming in. And a couple we've had already, like on a Tuesday night, Western Supermare away and things like that. But the standard's pretty much the same. I'd say it's more of a physical league. I think the Isthmian was more of a technical league.
Yeah.
But ultimately...
old school, but a little bit more old school,
But ultimately, there's big clubs with big budgets in both of them leagues. You've only got to look who's at the top of the tables.
Yeah.
So I think we're in... I think we're in a healthy position... league-wise, as we have been for the last 2 years. This year's been a little bit frustrating. I've had an injury list that I've never known. We've lost quite a few games, like 2-1, 1-0, 3-2.
Yeah, breaks your heart, doesn't it? Yeah,
Game's been, and I know every manager says it, but this one, they are true.
Yeah.
So it's been a little bit frustrating, but we're mid-table. I know whenever I talk about budgets, people don't like it because they think use it as an excuse. It's not an excuse. Every league in the country, if you took every team by their budget, that's probably where the league should be at the end of the year. And in most cases, not far off. We have in the last couple of years punched above where we probably should be. The difficulty with that then becomes expectation.
Well, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Yeah, it is because...
What about your own expectations, Steve? You know, because you've been here, and it's always difficult speaking to managers who are in jobs.
Yeah.
And I don't want to talk you out of the job, but your ambition wouldn't end at Haraborough.
No, my ambition hasn't stopped. And like I say, it's always a tricky question when you're in a job, because if you start talking about ambition too much and then you carry on losing,
they
might fulfil that ambition for you quite quickly.
I would always say that as
you want an ambitious manager.
Absolutely, as you do players. Yeah, you want every player to want to get out of it.
Unless my player's 30 plus, if I'm saying to him, to a 22-year-old striker who's scoring goals, where do you see yourself in a few years? And he's like, I just want to stay here and not progress. You might think, well, how hungry are you? The hungrier you are to get on, the better we'll do.
Man, you'll take it for a year, wouldn't you?
From a personal point of view, I've got a lot of games behind me now at this level.
Well, you're institutionalised now. You're a proper manager, aren't you?
Yeah, well, I'd like to think so. Not everyone would agree with that. But my ambitions are to manage in the league above. And then maybe after a few years, managing the league above that. And ultimately, when I went into management, my ultimate goal would be to work in football full-time.
Yeah.
However that capacity might be, you don't know. You could end up being a coach in a conference club. I don't know. But ultimately, the club has been very good for me, and I'd like to think I've also been good for the club. So I'd love to take Harry into the conference south. Will it happen? Probably not.
If it did, you'd actually be on a par with Danny Cowley.
It would be some achievement, but realistically, with what we have to work with budget wise, and it does come down to that. But don't get me wrong, everyone at this club works just as hard to a club that have got a budget 50 times.
No, I get that.
It's all relevant.
I get that.
It does come down to money and getting the best players out there. But we do well with what we've got. So for me, it's a bit of a win-win, because if I do well with Harrow does well.
Yeah.
I then maybe get to where I want to go.
Yeah.
That might be with Harrow. It might be someone else comes in and says, listen, you've done a great job there, Steve, for the last few years.
Yeah.
We think you could do this for us now. So they're never going to come and do that while Harrow's from bottom. So it is a bit of a win-win. And I've got 18 months left on my contract here. Most important thing is now to get ourselves up the league. Currently, like I say, we're mid-table, but if we can get ourselves a little run together, the aim was always, could we get into the playoffs? It's going to be hard this year. Not because of where we are at the minute, but look at the league.
It's just a tougher league.
Look who's in that top six, seven, or eight.
No, it's a tough
league. So if you finish above any of them,
yeah,
and you still might not make the playoffs, but yeah. you've done well. So we'll keep banging away at what we're doing at the minute, and just see what the future holds. But the one thing I'll do, and I've done no different from the minute I come here, is I'll give it 100% every week. I'll give it loads of hours all the time. Yeah. You know what the job's like.
Yeah.
You never switch off. It's 7 days a week. People don't understand that.
No.
So when someone has a pop at me at the side and I bite back, when their comments are quite personal, I will bite back because they don't know what I've had to do to get a side. They don't know what I had to do to get a side. No.
Part of this sort of series that I'm hoping to do, and it'll evolve on how good you are and the other guys are, because yourself, obviously I'm very good, you know, but
yeah.
One of the big reasons is I want people to see that. So I want people to find out about the guy, find out about his football, his whole thing, but find out the personal stuff.
One thing I would say to any supporter out there, and half of them won't listen to this, some of the ones that listen to it will say, oh, he's typical.
I turned it off after 20 minutes.
Typical manager, sitting up front, other managers. Yeah. Every single manager, every single club will be put everything into the job. We'll all be different, but we'll all put ourselves under huge pressure, because all we want to do is do well. Not for us, not for our egos. Or there's probably one or two that might have, but so what?
They
want to do well.
Yeah,
we all want to do well. But if you think your team's not playing well, or your manager's not picking the right order, we get things wrong all the time, and I'll continue to. Go and ask him in the bar. Go and talk to him.
You get that at this level. I always say to football supporters, best level of football to watch, pay a tenner, change ends at half time, and get to have a pint with the manager and tell him what he did wrong.
Listen, if someone shouts on the side it wasn't good enough, I'll probably agree with them. But when they're knocking your decisions and certain things you've done,
it's harder at a smaller club.
You hear everything.
I mean, I've been slaughtered at big clubs, small clubs, you know, like you come off at Wimbledon getting slaughtered, you just hear noise. You come off at Harborough getting slaughtered, you hear, and you know them.
It is difficult, because sometimes people say, oh, don't take it personal, and it's quite difficult too when it is personal.
Well, you take it personal because it
but sometimes it is personal.
That's the difference.
I think there's a fine line there, and I've had it recently, but don't need to go into that because it is what it is. I think, go and talk to a manager in a bar. Go and ask him a question, because none of them tell you to go away. They'll actually probably welcome the conversation, because sometimes you might think, why the bloody hell has he done that? But there will be a reason behind every decision. Might not be right. I had someone a few years ago rip into me and say, I can't believe you didn't play Lewis Driver at night. I explained to him in the bar, Lewis was suspended. Now that's the extreme.
But there's
always a reason.
Means the guy goes home with an idea.
What we do.
Yeah.
But if you're just going to scream personal abuse at the bloke, at the end of the day, he's just a normal bloke who's got to go home to his wife and kids, who's got to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go to work, who's doing the job to his best of his ability.
Yeah.
Now, he's...
Enough for fortunes, isn't there?
And I'll tell you what, regardless of what money people think we earn, we don't earn a lot of money. No. If you break it down by the hour, I'll be on strike with McDonald's workers tonight. Because I will be doing the job.
Exactly.
You do it, but you don't do it for money. No. You do it because you love football, you want to get on, as we spoke about, you've all got your own individual reasons why you want to do it.
Yeah.
But just have a little think about that individual before you question everything about his ability or him as a person, because he wants the best for the club exactly the same as you do.
Yeah. No, I agree with that.
Talk to him. You might not agree with it, but he'll probably give you an honest answer.
Yeah, most of them, I would
say. So leave me alone.
Well, I'm going to give you an honest answer. We were meant to do a 30-minute interview, and it's on 58 minutes now, so that's typical of me and you, isn't it?
It can go all night, mate.
Tim Fuel can cut it down if he wants it. I'd like him to leave it as it is. Most people won't get to hear the last half an hour. They'll have binned it. But but as always, Stephen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks.
No, cheers, Dave. Thanks, mate.
The Gaffer Tips.
A Jibba Jabba production. JIBBA. JABBA.